every wrinkle that's on my face, every brown spot that are on my hands, quite honestly, for me, are an indicator, a roadmap to a life well lived. I don't think there's any reason to sell women on this idea that we need to always look another age than we are. We are where we are, and aren't we lucky?
From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins.
Welcome back to the Expanded Podcast. So we are coming up on that time of the year where the season seems to be all about red candy hearts and love. And I think it can be really sweet for some people and also triggering potentially for others. And we really wanted to give you guys some support during this time of year, because I think the most profound love is the one that we have for ourselves. And so everything else kind of spiderwebs from there. So on Valentine's Day, we're going to be sending out a really special email to everyone who subscribes to our newsletter. We'll have the link in bio about all of our best tips and resources for dating, relationships, empowerment for our own internal love and towards ourselves. And also a special offer if you guys are looking to get a a la carte from us pertaining to these topics. So stay tuned for that newsletter coming out on Monday, and be sure to be part of our email subscription by subscribing the link in bio. Wishing you guys all a very loving season, and remember to take some time over this week, month, whenever, to really honor that self-love and self-care for yourself. So in today's episode, we have Libby Delena. Libby has made walking her daily habit that has accumulated her walking over 25,000 miles. That is the equivalent of the Earth's circumference. She walks day in and day out and swears by the power of walking in nature to really transform. It is a soulful and powerful practice that she shares in this episode today. Libby is a creative director, co-founder of Mechanica, design director, lecturer at USC, Roski School of Art and Design, and the author of the book Do Walk. Libby shares her journey of how the simple practice of taking a walk in nature every single day, which is something she has now done for 10 years, has allowed her to not only process her emotions, feel her emotions, listen to her pings, get in touch with what's going on inside of her, and really completely transformed her life. Libby has so much insight and wisdom, and so poetically is able to put to words why putting motion to emotion can help the head and the heart process together. She is a big time fan and TBM member alongside all of you guys. And some of you have even reached out ahead of time, noting that you have either looked at Libby as an expander or have been inspired by her creative design work, because she is truly a powerhouse in that department, as well as many other departments of her life. And she shares about motherhood and also her philosophy on anti-aging and how we can really embrace our bodies and our appearance at any age, shape, or form.
And now a word from our partners.
As you know, we are huge fans of Blue Blocks over at TBM, and I'm starting to think we're having a manifestation relationship with them because every time I'm thinking of getting a new cool product, somehow Blue Blocks already reads my mind and knows the type of thing that I'm anticipating needing. They have really become the one-stop shop for so many biohacking things. They are obviously the leader in blue light protection, but now they're even starting to move into the EMF protection space as well. I've been reading a lot about 5G and EMFs and things that can kind of come off of our devices and disrupt our bodies. And there's a lot of studies around on this, and I'm kind of someone who doesn't want to go down the rabbit hole too much because it might freak me out from any piece of technology going on. But I'm definitely curious, as I spend so much time on my phone and my laptop, different ways that I can protect myself going forward. One of the new products that they have recently released is their anti-radiation laptop mat. This is a little leather vegan mat that has four layers of anti-radiation technology built within it. It blocks 99% of low-frequency ELF wireless radiation, including the 5G spectrum. It also significantly reduces heat from reaching your lap when using your laptop on your lap. And if you're like me, sometimes working from home, I'll put my laptop on my legs or on my chest, or if I'm really lounging, I'll lay it on my stomach and probably hurt my spine, but work in odd positions. And so now I'll put the anti-radiation laptop mat underneath and it protects me from any of the damaging effects from my laptop. The other thing I'll use it for is at night when I'm going to bed, I'll put my iPhone on it. They also have an EMF harmonizing sticker that you can put directly on your cell phone to help harmonize that. I'm in the process of manifesting my new phone upgrade. So once I do that, I will get the harmonizing sticker for my new phone. But for now, I'm putting my phone onto the laptop mat. And that way, if I need to, you know, grab my phone in the middle of the night or it's right next to me, at least it's protecting some of the radiation or EMF that can be coming off of there as well. I think it's also really important to notice where you're resting some of these technology pieces. Like, for example, when I'm resting it on my lap or on my waist laying down on the couch, that's directly on my reproductive organs and a lot of the most important organs in my body. And as I am getting older and want kids one day, and this is just one extra layer of protection, really easy way to just protect those organs, make sure I'm not having bad effects from any radiation or EMF or 5G issues. And I've really been noticing a huge difference in my energy levels. It's such a cool way to start to work into different ways you can protect yourself really easily from all of the radiation and 5G that's going to continue to grow and emit in the world. Like I said, they also have the EMF harmonizing sticker, which you can stick on your phone, and it will help neutralize the EMF and radiation coming off of your phone when using it, which is definitely something that will be helpful. And they also release anti-radiation air tubes, which is the headphones. So if you'd like to learn more about the science behind this or any of their products, make sure to go to blueblocks.com/pages/magnetic and use code Magnetic, all caps, MAGNETIC for 15% off. Again, that's Magnetic, MAGNETIC, all caps, for 15% off your order. Enjoy. So I know you've heard Lacey share on here about her love for Beekeepers Natural, especially their bee-powered superfood honey, and I've shared about my love and obsession with their Propolis throat spray. But today I wanted to share two other items that they have that I am using a lot of lately. One is their Bee Better cough syrup. So it's becoming spring. The flowers are pollinating, it's gorgeous out, but my allergies are starting to kick in. Especially since moving to Los Angeles, I've noticed a really large uptick in allergies. So whenever I feel my throat get scratchy or my nose start getting runny, I'll lean over to the Bee Better cough syrup to kind of assuage any of those inflammations that are coming up. I'll use the Propolis throat spray on a daily basis for immune boosting, but if I'm needing kind of an extra kick, this is the best supplement to turn to. It has all of your immune boosting properties that you would look for. So it has unpasteurized buckwheat honey, which is really helping soothe like any inflammation, allergy. You know, it's the perfect thing for sore throat. It has elderberry fruit extract, the bee propolis, which of course is an all-time favorite, which is the bee's medicine. It has chaga mushroom extract, grapeseed extract, olive leaf extract. So all of these extracts are really huge boosters, and I love seeing them all in one product, which is so rare to find. The second thing that I've been loving a ton lately is their Be Smart Brain Fuel. So if you're someone that occasionally, you know, wakes up with some brain fog, you didn't get enough sleep the night before, it's just one of those days where it feels like your brain is not working at full capacity, and no matter the cups of coffee, it is not coming back online, the Be Smart Brain Fuel is your go-to. This has royal jelly, which really helps support your energy levels, hormone stabilization, and helps impact the brain. And it has two fatty acids inside of it that really help the promotion of BDNF, which helps create new neurons in the brain. So it's obvious why this would be great if you're having brain fog or difficulty with cognition for the day. It's also really great for reprogramming. If you're looking to deepen your manifestation practice even more so and really carve out those new neural pathways, this will actually help promote the ability to create new neurons. I'm telling you, it comes in different vials. Even just a half a vial or even a third of a vial, I notice a massive shift in my cognition with no caffeine crash, no energy crash. I'm not jittery. It's just complete clarity. And I'll use these actually on days where I'm recording podcasts, so my brain is working at its optimal capacity. Again, that's the Be Smart Brain Fuel. So if you're looking to try out any of these other products or maybe one of the ones we've mentioned before, you can go ahead and use the code TBM, all caps, for 15% off on the Beekeepers Natural website. And without further ado, here is Libby. We have a lovely guest joining us from the East Coast today. So excited. I need to know all about the weather that's going on there. But today we have Libby Delena. We are so excited to have you on. Welcome, Libby.
Thank you. And I'm happy to tell you all about our crazy weather this last few weeks. Oh my goodness. We have so much snow.
Yeah. How has that been? And we'll get into all of it, actually, now that I'm thinking of it. But let's kick off with one of the questions we ask everyone on the podcast. Do you happen to know your sun, moon, or rising sign?
My rising sign, I believe, is Aries. But yeah, I know my rising is Aries. I'm a full-on Aquarius. My sun is Aquarius, and my moon is Gemini.
Oh, very cool. What a cool combo. You must be a really fast manifester.
You know what? I think that's true, actually.
Wow. How do you feel some of these, you know, Aries and Aquarius and Gemini kind of represent you? Or do you feel like they touch in on any attributes that you resonate with?
You know, it's a great question. And I don't know that I'm studied enough to be thoughtful about answering that question. What I do understand about Aquarius is, you know, this sort of desire to kind of disrupt the status quo a little bit, to be fascinated with innovation and intellectual ideas. And tell me if I'm off base there.
Oh, this is so on point.
And my understanding of Aries rising is this desire to really turn those ideas into action. So, you know, I would argue that I don't have a whole lot of patience with regards to having an idea and then wanting to see it come to life in the world. So again, I wish I were more studied in the craft and practice and science of astrology, but I have to say that's about as far as I can get with you. You tell me, actually.
Well, I'm still learning too. Lacey is way more expertised in that section, but as I'm learning more, and especially I think I learn best with astrology when I witness other people who are certain signs and start to see their traits present. So like our marketing director, Grace, is Aries, and she's very, you know, as soon as an idea comes, she's like, let's get it in motion, send the outreach, take the action. Things just move very quickly. She's not overthinking things a lot. But then Lacey's an Aquarius sun. And so learning about Aquarius, exactly what you said, is sort of the bigger picture idea. They're very tapped into more than just what's right in front of them, extremely creative. You think of the age of Aquarius, it's like ushering into a new way of thought and being and all of that. And I think Gemini has the duality in it. I know that, but I think they're also very quick in their action, response, movement, that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, what I understand about this sort of moon in Gemini is this kind of really true fascination with data and stories and understanding sort of the details of everybody's life. When I meet somebody new, it's like this whole new universe is revealed. Each individual is an entirely new universe. And the real fun is collecting the data and understanding the story. So it's a nice component because it makes people really fascinating, or it makes me believe people are very fascinating, which they are.
Yes, I love that. And I think, you know, we always have this astrology question on, and it's interesting to see how people resonate or don't resonate. And I think it's just really nice to feel seen when there are certain categories and pieces of it. You're like, wow, that really makes me feel seen in who I am authentically, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, well said.
So tell us what your cultural background and upbringing.
Yeah. So I was raised in New England, in a teeny state of Connecticut, a small family in a very classic house with two parents and a brother and a cat and lots of books around us. It was a wonderfully intellectual upbringing and surrounded by people who valued words and literature. And my mom was a teacher, my dad an attorney. So the spoken word, the written word, the beautiful choice of language in a poem were things that were really, really wonderfully valued as a beautiful craft and an essential way of communicating. I was also raised by two feminists, a mom and a dad, who really espoused the notion of men and women and their equality and being able to attack various subjects and taking action with in equal measure. Men and women come at things differently, but certainly both have the right to have a say in how things move forward in this world. So being raised by feminists, I have moved through the world with, I guess, a belief system. You know, I truly felt as if nothing was out of bounds for me. I could look at anything as an arena to play in, as a place to discover or look into. I think by virtue of that, you know, in the late 80s, I was on three varsity sports, which at the time for girls was kind of an unusual thing. So I was sort of the athlete. And again, it was just after Title IX. So women in sports and women with muscles weren't quite things that the culture really valued or accepted. And I think it was that feminist upbringing that said, if that's what you love to do, then go do it. And that has followed me through my life. I then went on to enter the advertising space. I'm a creative director, an art director by trade, designer. And at the time when I entered that field of the creative directors in the world, certainly within the U.S., within ad agencies, 3% of them were women. So another moment when I guess I had to have enough belief in my ability to stand firmly in an ecosystem where there weren't a lot of expanders, to be perfectly honest. And now I'm sort of following a dream which I had when I was 13 after having read a book called West with the Night by Beryl Markham, who was one of the first women aviators. And I read that book and I thought, oh my gosh, I would like to be a pilot. I really like to fly. And so now I'm going down the path of getting my pilot's license. And just recently, I was sort of curious, how many women flyers are there? How many women pilots? And again, 3% are women.
Wow.
Which is so interesting. I seem to be drawn. I don't know if this is the Aries rising or even the Aquarius component of entering, seeming to tiptoe and enter fields where there weren't, as I said, a lot of expanders, a lot of role models, a lot of women to look to. And for some reason, I found that invigorating and exciting rather than overwhelming. So yeah, that sort of my upbringing, very, very intellectual, very mainstream, quite honestly, and very loving.
It sounds like you had a home environment that was reinforcing a belief system that sort of set you up for success, despite some adversity amongst society's, you know, beliefs at the time.
I think that's right. And, you know, one could argue that there's a lot of systems in our culture that need shifting and changing. And,
oh, yeah.
And I think I was raised in a household, especially with regards to, you know, the issue of women in various places. I was just raised by a father and a mother who thought, you know, go ahead, give it a try. And even if the system says you shouldn't be here or there are not a lot of you here, doesn't mean that you can't be there. So take a step in.
I can imagine some people at home listening in and thinking, you know, oh, she's so lucky. I wish I had that support or that belief. And one of the things that we do in the TBM work is inner child and reparenting. And in those moments in the meditation where we're quote unquote reprogramming, we kind of step in as that parent we wanted or adult we wanted to give us that encouragement so we can start living that out now. Can you paint the picture of maybe some other examples or specific statements that maybe your parents said or just how the feeling felt within the home so people could maybe use that model to start to reparent themselves?
You know, one thing I guess that pops to mind is I'm 6 feet tall and I grew into this height in high school. So one can imagine that being tall, I was not invisible. Being an athlete, I was kind of not invisible. And yet my natural tendency is perhaps introverted, more introverted. I don't necessarily like walking into a room and necessarily having attention thrown at me, not even thrown at me, surround me. That's a better way to put it. But by virtue of being my height and what I did, I think, you know, growing up in my household and then moving into college, there were many times when I'd step into spaces and, you know, felt very visible. And I remember saying this to my dad. It was the end of my high school years, not quite sure which year, that I didn't love that. Well, he was 6'5". So he, his whole life, had done the same thing. In any room he stepped into, eyes would turn simply because here comes a rather formidable force as he enters the room. So I think actually now, I think it was for my 16th birthday, I was 6 feet. He brought home as a birthday present at the time, a pair of platform shoes. That's what was hot. That tells you how old I am. I'm about to turn 60. So that tells you. And so he brought home platform shoes. When I wore them, I was 6'3". And his message really, in that moment was, you are who you are, stand tall, stand in that moment. He didn't have to say anything. The subtlety of that gesture was, you are where and who you are, so own it. And maybe a little subtly get used to it too. But I look back on that now and it was such a courageous gesture. It really subtly, without him articulating anything specifically, was this vote of confidence that where you are, how you stand in your space is important. So embrace it. It was a lovely gesture. I'll never forget.
I love that. Excellent parenting skills. That's so powerful. And it's so powerful that, you know, it's not like he had a 1 hour conversation. It was more of a, I'm taking this action with you and for you. And you're smart enough to deduce how to interpret the power behind this.
Yeah, that's nicely said. I think it took a few years, but I think the way it felt in that moment, I'm not sure I could have articulated it, but it felt very much like he was standing next to me with a firm hand on my back. He wasn't pushing from behind. He wasn't leading. He was standing right next to me and his hand was on my back firmly, as if to say, I see you, I have you, and you take the step forward. I'm not going to show you which way. I'm not going to tell you how to do it. I am here with all of my loving energy right next to you and supporting you.
So beautiful. And then you also went on to have two very tall boys of your own.
I did. Yes, absolutely. 1.65, 1.66. And the younger one, who's about 6'6", I think that's right, 6'6". He, remember at one point he was 6'3 or 6'4. He said, I think I'm good now. And, but kept going on. Yeah.
How did that transition from, you know, it sounds like lots of adventure, independence, being really active, creatively stimulated through your work. How did you move from that to the phase of motherhood?
Oh, gosh, what an interesting question. Let me think on that. I think the thing about motherhood is it is actually a radically creative act. It requires constant innovation. It requires patience, which I would say creativity requires. If I think of some of the most creative things I've done, they've gone through these phases, right? It's you sketch it out, you play with the idea, you begin to have it take more shape. And I think it's the same with parenting. You try one thing as you're raising your child, you sort of sketch it out, then it takes shape, then it becomes a practice. So I think they're very linked with maybe the headline of both requirement is both require an endless stream of patience. And actually, I would say self-care and non-judgment, that every time you show up to creatively express yourself or act in a parenting role, you're doing the best you can in every situation. So to take that first step without judgment, I think are the similar acts that are required in both.
How do you practice self-care? What does that look like for you?
Well, for me, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but it was 10 years ago in 2011. Life was quite grand. I say that acknowledging full well the privilege of being able to say that. My family was healthy. I just started a business and woke up one morning and I really realized that my days were really beautifully full. There was no complaint about any of it. There was errands and mothering and conference calls and creating and leading an organization. But what I realized very profoundly in this moment was one of the things that is most nourishing to me is being in the outdoors. And my days didn't have a lot of that built in, certainly not with any kind of thoughtful intention. So on that day, I decided I was going to just get up half an hour earlier and go for a simple walk, literally just, you know, a couple of miles with, you know, no expectation of a workout or exercise. The number of miles didn't matter. The number of steps didn't matter. What mattered was getting up and carving out this time to be in the outdoors. And I committed to do it for 30 days. And it's now 10 years later, and I've never missed a day. And this practice of a morning walk has become, without question, one of the most profound parts of my days. It is a meditative space. It's a quiet space. It's a learning space. I have learned so much with this practice. So that for me is where my most nourishing care comes from. And yeah, here we are 10 years later.
That's so impressive, even just to maintain a habit for 10 years, such a nourishing habit for 10 years. Now, I want everyone to also remember, you are on the East Coast. That means there's rain, there's snow, there's sleet, and you're still walking despite this. How are you navigating the terrain?
Yeah, it is a really fair question because when we first got on, we were talking about the weather. So it snowed 2 feet here last weekend. And today it's rather icy. We have an ice storm coming. Last week it was well below zero with the wind chill. And I don't say that to emphasize any kind of heroic gesture on my part. I've just committed to myself. And I know that even when it's hard, and maybe sometimes even especially when it's hard, I always learn something on a walk, and things are always better after a walk. So how do I do it? Quite honestly, I fine-tuned my little gear and my kit to make sure that I'm safe and warm and cozy. And, you know, there are some days, as I mentioned, the number of steps or the mileage really doesn't matter. There have been days, obviously in 10 years, I've been sick sometimes. It has been just gnarly weather. So sometimes it looks like a mile walk, and that takes 10, 15 minutes. And that's that. And there's no judgment that I didn't go my usual. I tend to go about 8 miles. But, you know, if it's super rainy and cold and miserable and it feels threatening, then I don't do that. And it is really also a practice in listening to my body and listening to what feels safe and appropriate. One of my really favorite phrases right now is by a man named Dean Karnazes. He's an ultramarathon runner. I just came across his quote, which is, make sure you don't mistake comfort for happiness. And I think for me, in some of those really uncomfortable walks, so, you know, the rain coming in my raincoat, down the back of my coat, into my boots, sure, it's uncomfortable, but I will say there's something that feels rather heroic that I've made this effort on my behalf. Being out in all sorts of weather is really exciting. There's a lot to be seen. There's, honestly, snowstorms have a beautiful sound and a beautiful fragrance to them. It's often on those days when it's really, truly miserable that the sort of deepest, most heartfelt lessons come to the surface. And I will also say there are definitely mornings when I put my feet over the edge of the bed and I think, not today. Today, you get to rest today. You've done it for 10 years. And we all know that little voice. That little voice is seductive and she's very convincing. And I have to say, I've really come to learn that on those days when she shows up and she says, oh, you've got jet lag, or, you know, you're feeling a little under the weather, take care of yourself. That for me, taking care of myself means getting outside, going for a walk. So it's a good question. The weather is something to be respected, and Mama Nature throws all sorts of things at you. And so I just respect her and take necessary precautions so that I can go out safely.
I love that the voice that comes up in your mind, you know, who might be trying to encourage you to rest more or not go that day. A lot of times that voice comes up, I resonate it to like exercise. I'm like, oh, I don't need to push myself so hard. But the beauty of the walk is that it is so gentle. It doesn't have to be a marathon that you actually might have needed rest from that day. And I love how you said, if it's one of those days, then you go out for 10 minutes and come back.
It's amazing even what a walk down the end of the driveway, around the block, whatever environment you live in does for you. I mean, I actually think walking is an act of radical self-care, to be perfectly honest. It's like a massage. To your point, it is a gentle act on our body. And if we are fortunate to be able-bodied, and I don't take that for granted one bit, walking is what makes us human. So walking to me is so, so nourishing. And I just have to remember that on those days when she tries to convince me to stay put. The best thing I can do is actually go for a walk. I guess I have this little mantra, which is the more we move, the more we are moved. So, you know, even on those days where it's icy cold or you have a headache, I feel like our senses are heightened on those days. And when we move, we see things differently. I've often said that, you know, the thing about walking for me and my work, which as an art director, you know, things that are visual are the most important. And I have often said that my walking practice taught me how to see, not just look, but see. So I have this one walk where I walk past this beautiful old barn. And once I finally realized that walking past her at that pace versus driving past her, I realized I could really see her. I'd see her in different lights. I'd see her in different seasons. And I think I sort of saw this barn's impact on our community differently. It's a barn that cared for and housed all of the dairy cows in our community for a long time. And so to be able to walk past and not just drive past and say, oh yeah, there's the barn, a red barn out of the corner of my eye, to really see the impact of that one structure. And that holds true for many things. So I think the thing about walking is that you are moving at a pace that is natural. And so therefore you see the natural energy of things more abundantly. It is the pace at which we're all supposed to be moving. I feel like I see more, beauty is more resonant. And again, I think I learned how to really see, not just look, through the practice of walking.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership, because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily, in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode.
That is so fascinating. I never really thought of that before, this idea that it is the pace at which we are most harmonious to be interacting with nature. Because I was like, oh, you know, I have certain memories from my hometown of driving past them and seeing them in snow and in fall and all of those things, but driving, and it's so quick and you don't really take it in. And when you walk past those things, and I try to do it now whenever I go home, my family's from Jersey, and so it's a very different landscape than Los Angeles. And I really try to take in the surrounding there, because I'm like, wow, there was so much here that I missed when I was living here as a child. And just walking around the yard or the street or whatever it may be, there's so much more you pick up.
Right. Well, walking in many ways can be a really mindful practice. Thich Nhat Hanh would say that it's actually how we come to understand the world is through the mindful walking. It can be a meditative practice. I mean, think about the natural rhythm of your steps often match the pace at which you breathe in and breathe out. Inhale, exhale is often matched with, you know, call it 1-2 steps in, 1-2 steps out. It's like a natural metronome. And so, you know, there's a lot about walking that is very grounded in the natural world. And to your point, the ability to move through the world, through the places that you walk at that pace, gives your heart, your mind, your spirit, your eyes, the ability, the time, the space to actually truly see things.
And in an interesting way, the commitment and recommitment to self, to honoring something for yourself every day, is actually reinforcing higher self-esteem, because you're keeping your word to yourself and you see that that is important and you're honoring it.
100%. It's as To Be Magnetic talks about, the notion of the daily practice is really just an exquisite gesture to, as you beautifully said, to yourself. You know, when I started, I decided to take a picture every single day. And And I happened to post it on Instagram because it was sort of when Instagram was getting going 10 years ago. And it was for nobody other than myself. That was my visual journal. And to your point, it was an accountability tool. I got a month in and I thought, I'm not going to break my streak now, right? It feels so good. I feel so nourished after every single walk. And the commitment to myself every single day, just as you noted, is a powerful tool, regardless of whether it's a walk or something else. It is really an exquisite expression of doing something thoughtful every day on your behalf.
Absolutely. You had mentioned on another podcast that, you know, it's really putting motion to emotion and helping align your head and heart. Talk a bit about that. And also, what were some of the biggest emotions that walking helped you process through?
I think because I grew up in sort of an intellectual family, I honestly, in many ways, was very disconnected from my emotions. It's not to say that I didn't know that I had them. I also, having grown up an athlete, after high school, I went on to college and I was a rower and was able to row at a very high level. And, you know, one of the things about, in many ways, about being an athlete is the ability to take those things that you're feeling and put them away. The thing about rowing, you get 2 minutes into a race and you're burning up. The ability to be able to dismiss all of those feelings of stop, 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 this hurts, you're burning up, is part of what makes you go fast. And so I had to sort of unlearn some of that. And the ability to connect what I was feeling both physically, emotionally, spiritually has been, has been really this 10-year practice of really recognizing what I know, what my body knows, to this kind of intellectual understanding of it. So for me, adding motion to those emotions that resided in my body was an essential way for me to connect those two. The way I sort of visualize it is, say I woke up in the morning and I had the grumps, a good case of the grumps or something to figure out. The way I visualize it, I guess I think this is because I'm an art director, is I imagine this big piece of rope that was tied into a knot. And it was just, you know, imagine the size of your fist, this complex knot. And that was residing right in my belly or in my chest. My visualization was, as soon as I stepped out of bed, every step I took gradually loosened that knot. Have you ever noticed how when people pick up newborns or babies and hold them in their arms, they sort of rock back and forth on their hips, kind of cradling them, holding them, you know what I mean? Just kind of this sway. So having had two kids, I remember thinking, oh, that's what this feels like, is I've got this knot in my belly, but every step I'm sort of cradling and rocking that emotion into safety, into comfort, into seeing it, untangling it so I could see it clearly. And truly, it's taken me 10 years to get to a place where I think I really acknowledge what my body's telling me, because I spent an awful lot of time not paying attention to that. And then you asked, what is the sort of biggest thing? And without getting into too many details, with about 2 years ago, I was at work and I got some very personal, intimate, crushing news. And I thought to myself, it was just as I was leaving work, it was about 5 o'clock. Talk about rock bottom. It's the kind of news that brings one to their knees, brought me to my knees. I got home and I thought, well, I very easily could get in the shower and curl up into my bed and pull my cozy blanket over my head and honestly, yeah, somehow get through the evening. And as soon as I got home, I knew exactly what I needed to do. At this point, I had been walking for 8 years of my life. And I put on my walking shoes and I just essentially took that knot that was in my chest, in my heart. And I thought, okay, let's go. Ooh, makes me choked up thinking about it. And I decided, let's go on a walk. you know, my walk is my best friend. What I thought I was going to do is go for an hour or two walk and come on home. And as it turned out, I did my usual loop, which is about 4 miles. And I thought after every loop, I'm just going to go and sort of stand on my front step and just pause for a minute and check in, do a little body scan, check in. After every single loop, what I realized was I needed to keep walking. So I don't mean this to be dramatic. It's actually was wonderful, to be perfectly honest. I walked literally all night. I came back at about 7 in the morning, took a shower and went down to work. That is not to say that that walk solved anything, cured anything, made the wrongs right. That's not what happened. But what it enabled me to do was to take that energy, make sure it didn't get stuck, and cradle it. Tell that emotion it was okay to come up. There was honestly some loops, this might give it all away, where I turned on Beyonce's Lemonade and Beyonce and I honestly shouted at the top of our lungs around these loops. And I would, there'd be some loops where I stomped my feet. There were some loops where I just honestly screamed at the top of my lungs. There was a loop where I just wept and it was all perfect, lovely, wasn't scary. I think I otherwise would have had the capacity to keep swallowing and never sort of give that moment its due. And, you know, it's too dramatic to say that my walking practice saved my life, because I don't mean it literally. What I mean, however, is that my walking practice helped me navigate, you know, a rock bottom that, knowing my personality, I very easily could have stuffed aside. But that's not what happened.
That's so, so powerful. You know, the intuitive wisdom of knowing my body needs this now, the intuitive wisdom of the body scan to check in, to say, how do I feel now? Do I need to keep going? Is this not still tangled tight within me, waiting to be expressed more? And then the other forms of expression during that walk, you know, whether it was the crying or the singing or vocalizing or stomping, it's letting that emotion process through the body. I mean, we know from so much research now how much trauma does store in the body. And in those moments where it feels like the rug is pulled from out under us and we're in a panic and everything could change, our bodies need to process that too. Our minds, of course, intellectually have to come to a place of understanding, but our bodies really need to process. And that's why I love your practice so much. I'm really interested right now in learning when someone has that moment of intense fear, or intense pain, or intense scaredness, knowing all these things about self-help, what are some of the best tools to do immediately after? And I feel like walking to process is for sure one of those tools.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the thing that is beautiful, again, if we are able-bodied, it is accessible to us all. And it doesn't have to be magnificent walk. It certainly can be. But yeah, I would say walking alone in nature with only your inner voice as a guide is essential. It's essential to understanding ourselves, to finding ourselves, to nourishing ourselves. You know, in nature, even if one lives in the middle of downtown LA, if you were to walk down the street and see the flowers in a window box or some trees or walk through a park, it doesn't have to be on a mountaintop. I think it is walking through those kind of ecosystems is essential. Yeah, I'd have to say my dear friend Alex L. and I, who love this practice so much, and I know you spoke with her recently. You know, I think what we would both say about this practice is that it is in the quiet where we find a lot of answers, a lot of answers. Now, the quiet could be a seated practice, classic meditation practice. And, you know, I happen to think my walking practice is a meditation as well. And it's no earbuds, just out in the world where a lot of answers reside. And it's in this busy world, in this noise-filled world, those are rare moments. And yet, quite honestly, I think in a time of stress or in a time of creativity or a moment of problem solving, it is in that space that a lot of answers reside. Now, I'm not sure I would have been able to tap into that until I was sort of deep into my practice, because as I mentioned, I was sort of distanced from all that learning, but I've come to a place where the quiet is really a treasure trove of answers.
And I imagine you probably are getting all of your pings and inner guidance and probably some of your biggest lessons teaching and comforting yourself amongst those walks as well.
You're 100% right. It is also a place where, you know, I really tap into who are the expanders, who are the people that I can look to. And I spend time with them. I study them. I look at them. And it is in the walk that I begin to sort of embrace that energy of expanders, the lessons. So for me, it, you know, one of the things I sort of talk about a lot is keep your feet on the ground and your eyes to the sky. That very much comes from the to be magnetic expander philosophy in a way, which is keep your feet where you are, who you are, but then make sure that your eyes are to the sky. Look to people, look to examples of those who can show you a path, show you a way step by step. Back to your earlier point, though, I can't tell you recently, in the last 6 months, the number of pings I get on every single walk is amazing. And right now seems to be my ability to manifest is kind of unstoppable. I'm not sure why that is. Great gratitude to all of the To Be Magnetic teachings, quite honestly.
Yes. So what are some manifestations that have come through to expand the community?
Well, let me just tell you one story. This doesn't quite answer your question, but it's sort of parallel, which is, I mentioned my dear friend Alex L. If you don't know her, please be sure to look her up. She's just an absolute treasure of wisdom. One day we had a conversation and she had just mentioned that she had been on your podcast. I said, oh my gosh, it's one of my favorites. What a dream come true that would be to be on that podcast, because I just admire everybody they speak with. And she said, well, I think that could happen. I think that's probably the way. And here we are. So as example number one.
She was your expander. Oh. She was on it. She was your expander. And then she was also kind of like a vision holder because she made the introduction and showed us what was possible to connect to.
That's right. And in fact, one funny thing was she said, well, you know, here's the thing. Let me be your vision holder and I'll make an introduction. My first reaction, interesting, was, oh, no. If the universe wants that to happen, the universe will make it happen. And it was literally the next day I was out on a walk and I thought, Lib, you're being crazy. That was the universe making it happen. So I called her up and I said, hello, is this the universe? Everything I said yesterday, I don't know what was going on. But so what I often do is every week I start a page. I write out the things that I would like to manifest. And I would say every single week, I'm probably crossing half of them off because they've happened. So it's very magical.
Oh, so exciting. One thing I did want to ask you about as well is you have anti-aging mantras. So what is your philosophy here? Expand us all. Because I think, especially for women, there's so much societal programming around just aging and getting older and just embracing those moments. How can you, you know, inspire everyone to sort of start honoring those chapters and looking forward to it more than ever?
Oh, thank you for asking. Well, number one, let me start with, in about a week, I turned 60. And
woo,
I know. It's even saying that out loud just doesn't even feel familiar. But I think that's part of it, which is we have to say it out loud. When I say I'm anti-aging, what I really mean is I feel so incredibly lucky to be here and at this age. You know, every wrinkle that's on my face, every brown spot that are on my hands, quite honestly, for me, are an indicator, a roadmap to a life well lived. And when I was about in my mid-30s, this sort of conversation became very vibrant for me because I went silver gray really early. So I have been a gray-haired person since I was about 32, 33. And when I say gray, I don't mean just sort of salt and pepper. I mean like sparkly gray.
Your hair is stunning, by the way.
Aren't you nice? Well, there was one day I was walking down the street and this little girl stopped and she looked up to me and she said, your hair is magic. It's like, she said, it has magic in it. And I hadn't been considering dyeing my hair. It's sort of not who I am. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. You know, everybody should live their lives as they feel most full. But for me, that wasn't the path I was going to go down. So number one, I was introduced to the notion of visually aging very early. This little girl saying, your hair has magic in it, was pretty wonderful. And quite honestly, at some point, I came across two pictures, one of Jane Goodall and actually one of Lauren Hutton. And one could say, well, Lauren Hutton is absolutely stunning. And this picture of her is, of course, as stunning as can be. And she is full gray hair, full of these beautiful wrinkles. And I have it taped up next to my desk. It's right here next to my desk, as is a picture of Jane Goodall. They are my expanders for aging. I don't think there's any reason to sell women on this idea that we need to always look another age than we are. We are where we are, and aren't we lucky? I might even say, aren't we fucking lucky? I feel that way really profoundly, and so I don't have anything to hide. I think it's a little in parallel to my dad handing me my platform shoes, white platform shoes, is here I am, stand in it. And, you know, I can't pretend to be anything else other than a 60-year-old at this point. So that's where I am, and proudly, happily, very happily.
That is so, like, you are so my expander in that, because that energy and that feeling of appreciation and confidence and acceptance and vibrance for life too. That is how I want to view myself at every age, you know? So it's so beautiful to hear you speak to that with such truth and authenticity.
The other thing I think I try and do are all the things that maybe culture, again, the systems say we're not supposed to be able to do. So one thing I can just end on here is I've been doing this cold plunging, sort of Wim Hof cold exposure. And I do it with a group of women of all ages, literally from probably mid-20s up to mid-60s. And, you know, here's the thing. We just came out of the water moments ago. The water's 42 degrees. We were in there for about 10 minutes. We just come out of the water with such vibrancy, such joy, such excitement. We've all done it together as a community, so we feel very connected and trusting of one another. But back to what we were saying earlier, it doesn't really matter how old we are. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly one of the older members of the group. You know, I like to say courage is an inside job, and we host that at any age. And so, even if we're doing things that culture says, well, 60-year-olds aren't supposed to be able to do that, to be doing them in community and doing it regularly, well, it's life-affirming. It says that age is just a construct. It is not a limitation. And one could argue, think about how many cultures where the elders of the community are the wisdom keepers. So I feel honored to be tiptoeing into that space.
So where can everyone find you? Obviously, you have to check out and buy her book, Do Walk, which details a lot more of your journey with walking and tips on walking and all of that. And yeah, share your Instagram and the new project you have with Alex L as well.
Thank you so much. So my Instagram is Park Here, as in park your car here. My middle name is Park. I started 10 years ago. I didn't know what else to do, so it's Park Here. But Alex and I are hosting at an Instagram handle, This Morning Walk, a community of people who are committed to going for a walk every day. And we have wonderful journal prompts from Alex and a lot of shout outs. And one of the really fun things is we repost everybody's walk. So if you just scroll through the stories, you'll see, honestly, this incredible tour of the world and people walking, which is so fabulous. Alex and I have a couple of other projects coming up around walking, which is really fun. as you mentioned, just wrote a book on the power, the sort of transformative capacity of a simple morning walk. Yeah, so park here, Instagram, This Morning Walk, and also my website, This Morning Walk. There's quite a few thises and thats there, some resources that are really helpful. In fact, there was just a study that came out that a simple 10-minute walk every single day can add years to your life. So there's all sorts of evidence-based science on the power of a walk.
So exciting. So exciting. Thank you so much, Libby. This has been such an honor. And I feel really motivated to go walk now.
Oh, great. Well, Jessica, I have to say you're a beautiful interviewer. Your questions are so thoughtful. And please, if you do go for a walk, just tag us at This Morning Walk and we'll look forward to it. But thank you so much. I'm really happy this all manifested. Thanks to all of you.
Yes. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is The Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, The Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.